Welcome. Every Lord's Day is a blessing to gather together to worship our Almighty Creator, and I'm thankful for everyone that has chosen to be here today, everyone that was able to make it out. It brings us joy to be able to sing praises to Him and go to our God in prayer. And it should be our goal every time to give him all the praise that He is due, and to look into His Word to better know and understand how to follow the truth. Again, I hope I say this often. If there's ever any questions about anything, please come see me. Please ask. We just want to teach what the Bible teaches and encourage others to follow the Scriptures. In Deuteronomy chapter 30, verse 19 says, "I call heaven and earth as witness today against you, that I have set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore, choose life, that both you and your descendants may live." Moses here is talking about the choice to follow the Lord, the choice to obey His commandments and adhere to the law that was given to the children of Israel. And he said the choice is yours, to make the choice between actions that will lead to life, or you can choose actions that lead to death. And in a very real way, our country is making a very similar choice right now. If you've not heard, it's expected that the Supreme Court is going to strike down Roe versus Wade and put an end to that ruling from back in 1973 that made abortion legal throughout the country. And in that time, Americans have killed over 63 million babies. 63 million. That is a staggering number. I'm not sure the exact population of the U.S., pretty sure it's under 400 million. So you think about statistically, that is a large, large percentage of this country that we have just murdered senselessly. Hopefully, Roe versus Wade will get overturned in the near future. And then if that happens, this issue will be given to the states, and hopefully states will also go on to outlaw abortion as it should be. Moses is not talking about abortion in Deuteronomy 30. He's not talking about that. But as you read those words, "I've set before you life and death, blessing and cursing, therefore choose life, that both you and your descendants may live. It's really difficult to read that in light of current events and not think about this issue and this choice of choosing life, right? May God give our Supreme Court justices the courage to stand up and do what is right in this situation. If you're not already praying for the safety of our Supreme Court justices, please be praying for their safety. Please. There are some radical individuals who very much want abortion to be kept legal in this country and are willing to do it. If they're not afraid of killing innocent children, what makes you think they're not afraid of doing other harmful things to adults? If you're not praying for their safety, please do so. There were protests out in front of their homes, in their very neighborhoods, just this past week. Some of the justices that are believed to vote against Roe versus Wade. Also, just this past week, the Senate voted on a bill that would make abortions legal nationwide, and in many ways would go much farther than what Roe versus Wade allows. This is a bill that was passed through the House of Representatives back in the fall. It's titled Women's Health Protection Act of 2021. Women's Health Protection Act. And the stated purpose of the bill is, quote, to protect a person's ability to determine whether to continue or end a pregnancy, and to protect a health care provider's ability to provide abortion services. You can go on and find the exact language, the whole bill online, the Women's Health Protection Act of 2021. Go back and read that and look at the issues that our leaders are debating and discussing at this time. And in that is a whole bunch of language, even denying what a basic woman is, right? In this bill and this language about transgender ideology and all of that. Thankfully, this bill failed to pass the Senate, but only by a vote of 49 in favor to 51 against. That's how close we are in this country to making it legal to kill children in the womb. Have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather expose them. What we find in Ephesians 5 in verse 11. Have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness. If abortion doesn't fall in that category, I don't know what does. I don't know if anything in this lesson would change anyone's mind. I think it's safe to say all of us here are probably in agreement already about this issue. Hopefully we have the courage. I love the line in the song James just led, let courage rise with danger. Our courage needs to rise to the occasion, whatever that occasion is. Hopefully we have the courage when this discussion gets brought up to engage with our friends and our family and our coworkers about this. God has called Christians, his people, to expose the works of darkness. And I get it. I get it's popular and desirable to avoid political discussions, right? Those are not fun discussions to have most times. I get it. I want to avoid those too. But this is not an issue that we can remain silent on. It's not an issue that we can remain silent on. Psalm 82 and verse 3 says, vindicate the weak and fatherless. Do justice to the afflicted and destitute. I can think of no one more weak and innocent and vulnerable and destitute than a defenseless baby. And an innocent life is worth protecting and defending. There are two really big issues with abortion that I want to look at today. Not to say that there's only two issues with abortion, obviously, but after a while, you're going to get restless and want to go have lunch. So we'll just keep it to two really big issues. And in that, we'll look at some of the arguments that are often made and compare that with some scriptures to see why these arguments don't hold water. I've done my best not to just argue with the straw man. A lot of times with difficult issues, religious or political or both, a lot of times we end up fighting a straw man. We make arguments that people aren't really making, and that doesn't do us any good. I want us to look at what people are actually saying. So I've done some reading. I've listened to some interviews from people that are very much in favor of abortion, and my hope is to compare those views people have today, again, with the scriptures. Over the past 2 weeks, we've discussed courageous truth and courageous righteousness. And I'm not sure there's a more fitting topic to follow that up on, a more fitting current event to look at than this issue of abortion and being pro-life in today's society. Let us all find the courage in the truth of God's word to defend the truth and to make righteous choices based on the truth and to speak up and share the truth with others. If you would start back, go back over to Genesis 1. Genesis 1, I can't think of a better place to start than this, where Brother Charles read a few minutes ago. Let's reread this, verses 26, beginning of Genesis 1. And God said, let us make man in our image. According to our likeness, let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, over the cattle, over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created him. Then God blessed them, and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth and subdue it. We'll stop right there. But fundamental to the very fabric of humanity and what it means to be a human being is the fact that every human being is created with a soul in the image of God. That is a bold, transformational thought to our existence. That changes everything we should think and see and about life itself. We are created in the image of God. God's image is at the core of every human being. No exceptions to that. And so because every single person is conceived, is created in God's image, the first big problem I see is that abortion is the product of a godless worldview. Abortion is the product of a godless worldview. I know that sounds harsh. I know there are a lot of people that identify as a Christian, that call themselves a Christian, who are pro-choice when it comes to abortion. But when you read the scriptures, there's no way to sugarcoat this, right? There's no way to sugarcoat this. Do we want to change minds and hearts? Absolutely, we do. But that doesn't mean we can compromise or sugarcoat scriptures either. To abort an innocent baby, to stop the beating heart of a human, is to destroy a life created in God's image. And that is exactly what abortion does. It stops the beating heart of someone created in God's image. Why on earth would anyone who believes in God, who believes in an almighty creator that gives life, think it is okay to do that? That is an inconsistent view to hold, that God creates life and I have the right to destroy an innocent life. Those are completely inconsistent views that you cannot put together. Remember what we read over in the Psalms. If you turn over to Psalm, let's read verse 139, 13, and the first part of verse 14. For you formed my inward parts. You covered me in my mother's womb. I will praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. God creates each and every person in the womb of their mother. Every one of them. You go back to Psalm 127. Psalm 127, verses 3 through 5. Behold, children are a heritage from the Lord. That means a gift, an inheritance. The fruit of the womb, of the womb is a reward. Like arrows in the hand of a warrior, so are the children of one's youth. Happy is the man who has his quiver full of them. Every single child is a gift from God. God tells his children are a reward. Why would any person of faith not only reject God's gift, but literally destroy, in every sense of the word destroy, that gift from God? That gift that is created in his image. To think abortion is okay in any way is to have a godless view of life and this world we live in. But if I don't believe that God is the creator of the universe, if I don't believe Genesis 1, if I don't believe Genesis 1 in verse 1, in the beginning God created, then what does it really matter? If mankind is not created in the image of God, and we just happen to evolve over billions of years, and one day, you know, long time ago, we crawled out of the sea, and over several more million or billion years or whatever, we happen to look something like an ape, and then, you know, over several more million years, we happen to look like we look today. If that's where life comes from, then what's the big deal? You remove God's image from the soul of an individual. And so what? The argument made by bioethicists today is it's just like pulling a weed from a garden. And that's not my words. That's not an analogy that I thought up. If you haven't read the bulletin for today, read the bulletin. There are published, the Journal of Medical Ethics has published bioethicists that make that claim that abortion or even killing newborns is no different than pulling a weed. The distinction between a human being created in the image of God and a living being that's the random byproduct of billions of years of evolution, that difference is everything. That distinction makes all the difference. So with that, we're going to look as some of the reasons people often give for abortions. Here's what Planned Parenthood says. It's just copy and pasted from their website. The largest abortion provider, that might be hard to read in the very back. And those colors are always different here than what they look like on the computer. So I hope this works, but I'll give it to you later if you want me to. I'll read through this. So they say, Planned Parenthood, largest abortion provider in the United States, everyone, quote, everyone has their own unique and valid reasons for having an abortion. Some of the many different reasons people decide to end a pregnancy include: they want to be the best parent possible to the kids they already have. They're not ready to be a parent yet. It's not a good time in their life to have a baby. They want to finish school, focus on work, or achieve other goals before having a baby. They're not in a relationship with someone they want to have a baby with. They're in an abusive relationship or were sexually assaulted. The pregnancy is dangerous or bad for their health. The fetus won't survive the pregnancy or will suffer after birth. And the last one, they just don't want to be a parent. So I've taken these arguments and I've tried to reorganize them and categorize them into five basic pro-abortion or pro-choice arguments, as they say. It's interesting to note, you know, they give a lot of reasons here. You can find others. There's a lot of different reasons for being pro-abortion. Some of them even contradict themselves. But a lot of reasons why abortion should be legal. For pro-lifers, there's just one, isn't there? There is just one reason for being pro-life. And it is because abortion kills an innocent child. That's pretty easy. We all rally around that one point. That's kind of an interesting note to make, I believe, that it's just one reason why we're pro-life. And everybody has to search and dig and find and try to create all these other types of reasons for being pro-abortion. So for the sake of understanding, let's look at some of these pro-abortion arguments. All of these, I believe, fall under the idea that the idea of someone having a godless worldview. So first is the science-based argument. It's only a clump of tissue, or it's only a fetus, not a baby, you might hear. You don't hear this argument very often anymore. As years have gone on, you hear this argument less and less because, quite frankly, we know better. We know better than this. One, only living things grow, right? Inanimate, non-living objects do not grow. Two, what else has a heartbeat other than a living being? Right? You can detect that heartbeat as early as 6 weeks, I think, and then they say it starts much earlier than that in the womb, right? Advances in technology, ultrasound development, and all this has led us to see absolutely there is no denying that is a tiny human inside of the mother's womb. God's word verifies the existence of life inside the womb. We looked at Psalm 139 earlier, where God formed, you know, a person's inward parts inside of the mother's womb. Jeremiah 1:5, the Lord says to Jeremiah, "Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Before you were born, I sanctified you." When Mary, the mother of Jesus, went to visit her relative Elizabeth to tell her that she's expecting a child, she was expecting Jesus. Elizabeth was pregnant with John at the time, John the Baptist, right? Luke 1:44, Elizabeth said to Mary, "For indeed, as soon as the voice of your greeting sounded in my ears, the babe leaped in my womb for joy." Leaped in my womb for joy. And so this science argument has shifted over the years. Because you can't be an honest individual and claim that that's not a baby. And so a lot of pro-abortion people are admitting now that that is a baby. I think it was Naomi Wolf back in the 90s was one of the leading folks to start changing this conversation. A pro-abortionist saying we have to start admitting that's a baby and making our claim in light of acknowledging a living human being in the womb. And so this has shifted now into more of an argument about, well, the unborn is not physically viable. You know, they couldn't survive on its own outside the womb. By the way, viability, as science has advanced, children are viable much and much and much younger now than they ever were before. So the argument is more about bodily autonomy, right? And they'll say, one woman argued, "You do not have the right to bodily autonomy if you are not autonomous." The problem with this argument is babies are still not technically viable once they're born. I mean, they still have to have support from other human beings, right? They still provide on care and nourishment and protection and all of this to survive, even if they've gone the full term. Every newborn depends on the support of other human beings to survive. Planned Parenthood, by the way, if you pay attention to those arguments, they don't even try the science argument. That's not even on their list, that it's not viable or bodily autonomy or whatever. And so pro-choicers, they're not unified in this argument at all. There are plenty of people who will in light of the science, in light of acknowledging that's a baby, plenty of people out there who advocate for post-birth abortions. It's a term they use. Think about that. After-birth abortions. That's just murder, right? Not that abortion isn't murder in itself, but now we're talking about a baby that is already born. That's infanticide. That's infanticide. And they advocate for that because of some of the other reasons that we will look at today as well. So the fact that a baby is living, that the science supports, yeah, that's a human. That's a living human being, doesn't stop pro-choicers from being pro-abortion. There's the pragmatic argument, and these arguments come back to the mother's quality of life, right? And when you look at statistics for why women actually have an abortion, this is the number one that they will claim. It's something to do with this. They will claim a pragmatic reason. Planned Parenthood leans very hard on these types of reasons. They want to be the best. This is coming from Planned Parenthood website again. They want to be the best parent possible to the kids they already have. So the thought is adding more children to the family will make life more difficult. And so that's their reason. It's not a good time in their life to have a baby, they say. And often that's because the mother is young or single or living in poverty or whatever reason they want to apply there. Or they say they want to finish school, focus on work, or achieve other goals before having a baby. So basically they're sacrificing their child, literally sacrificing their child, so that they can pursue their own personal goals. A lot of reasons with this type of argument, obviously, right? First and foremost, of course, personal inconvenience isn't an excuse to kill somebody. It's not an excuse to kill somebody because it's inconvenient for you. And it's not the right time, as you want to say. That is still a child made in God's image. And that's why this verse is hanging out over here the rest of the lesson, because that fact remains throughout all this. And trumps all of these arguments on its own at face value. But beyond that, this argument assumes that we know exactly what's best for our life, right? I have this plan for my life, and it's going to go according to my plan, and I know what's best for my life, and God's timing is wrong. Children are a gift from God, right? All children are a gift from God. And so you might think it's the wrong time, but God says, nope, this is the right time for you. This is an inheritance from me, God says. Is bringing a child into your life difficult? Yes, of course it is. But parenting is always difficult. I don't know if anyone is ever ready to become a parent. You can't prepare for that fully until you go through it. And so it's always difficult. But you know what? Life proves over and over that sometimes it is the most difficult of circumstances that we go through that often prove to be the most rewarding, aren't they? The obstacles that come up, even unexpectedly sometimes. James 1, 2 through 4 says, "My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. But let patience have its perfect work, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing." Raising a child is one of the most rewarding trials I could ever imagine in this life. And it sure has potential to produce a lot of patience if you let it. Doesn't always work with everybody, but nothing will help produce more patience in you than raising a child. And so there's a lot more we could say about this pragmatic argument. But again, children are created in the image of God. And there's no pragmatic, practical reason in the world that makes it okay to end that life. Next is the compassionate argument. Many people support abortion when a baby has physical defects that will lead to a difficult life. And so they claim that abortion is out of compassion for that baby that's going to have a difficult life. I'm not sure what that says about individuals that are born and living with missing limbs and various disabilities and chromosomal abnormalities and such. Planned Parenthood offers the following. They say the fetus won't survive the pregnancy or will suffer after birth. And so in order to eliminate the suffering, the potential suffering, they propose just killing the child without obviously considering that child's own choice. And obviously, without knowing what's going to happen and develop in this child's life, there are countless of examples of scary stories about, oh, your baby's going to have this problem and that problem, and they were born, and turns out it wasn't so bad, right? Turns out they might have still had problems, but they can still go on to live great lives regardless of these problems. Excuse me. This argument is a favorite of academics and some of those bioethicists, as I mentioned before. But a major problem with this, aside from that we're created in God's image, another major problem is if you want to apply this compassionate argument logically and consistently, the exact same argument can be used and is used to support infanticide and euthanasia. Exact same argument. Peter Singer is perhaps the world's most famous bioethicist, been publishing since the 70s, and he once wrote, "Killing a defective infant is not morally equivalent to killing a person. Sometimes it is not wrong at all." Singer is still living and active and still receiving awards to this day for his academic achievements, they call it. And if you go on his website, to this day, in the FAQ section, he stands by that quote. He doesn't like the term defective infant. He says that's not really acceptable, you know, terminology anymore. But he doubles down to this very day, saying, bear with me through this quote, if you would. This is the practical application of this compassionate argument in action. He says, "Newborn human babies have no sense of their own existence over time. So, killing a newborn baby is never equivalent to killing a person. That is, a being who wants to go on living. That doesn't mean that it is not almost always a terrible thing to do. It is, but that is because most infants are loved and cherished by their parents. And to kill an infant is usually to do a great wrong to her or his parents." So his argument is the only thing that makes killing a baby wrong, in or out of the womb, is because of the harm it does to the parents. That's his claim. He goes on to say, he's not quite done there, "Sometimes, perhaps because the baby has a serious disability, parents think it better that their newborn infant should die. Many doctors will accept their wishes to the extent of not giving the baby life-supporting medical treatment." By the way, this happens all the time, far too often. Mainstream media does not cover these stories. They don't tell you these stories, but there has been a lot of very revealing undercover investigative work in the past several years that has shown the horror stories, the atrocities that take place in some of these medical abortion facilities, of babies being left to die, or the harvesting of organs and body parts and other things that are truly horrifying in every sense of the word. He goes on to say, not giving a baby life-supporting medical treatment, that will often ensure that the baby dies. My view is different from this, but only to the extent that if a decision is taken by the parents and doctors that it is better that a baby should die, I believe it should be possible to carry out that decision, not only by withholding or withdrawing life support, which can lead to the baby dying slowly from dehydration or from an infection, but also by taking active steps to end the baby's life swiftly and humanely. This guy's receiving awards. This guy has not been canceled by our society. Everyone's wanting to cancel everybody, right? Kick them all off social media and all this. This guy is still very much a public esteemed figure in academia. That's disturbing. That's extremely disturbing and extremely, extremely dangerous thinking. He's trying to come from a place of compassion, of what's best for the baby, what's best for the parents. But this is the exact type of thinking that has led to some of the worst human atrocities in our time. It's the type of thinking that led to the eugenics movement 100 years ago in the early 1900s. Again, more on that in the article from today. Margaret Sanger was a part of the eugenics movement when she started Planned Parenthood in the early 1900s. She was a white supremacist who herself started it as a means of starting Planned Parenthood as a means of getting rid of African Americans. And this isn't Planned Parenthood. Now they finally admit her racist background in some of this. Even today, when you look at where most Planned Parenthood locations are, they exist mainly in poor and minority communities. It is this same eugenics movement that spawned the Holocaust. Again, you don't read about this in most textbooks, but if you look at the history, you look at the writing, you look at how this happened, it started with killing defective babies, is who Hitler had his doctors first put to death before he started killing the Jews. The ultimate goal of this was to create a superior human race. That's where this thinking comes from. And all that being said, every single one of those individuals still created in the image of God. Don't let anyone try to use the compassionate argument. There is nothing compassionate about killing disabled people. That leads us to the selfish argument. My body, my choice is what you hear chanted loudly and proudly. Of course, people never claim selfishness as a reason to have an abortion. But again, I don't know what else to call it. I don't know what else to call it other than just pure selfishness. Planned Parenthood, again, encourages such excuses. They're not ready to be a parent yet, they say. They're not in a relationship with someone they want to have a baby with. Or perhaps, I think this might be the most honest answer they give. They just don't want to be a parent. And I think that's probably the most honest reason for the large portion of abortions that take place. The truth is, you make your choice when you choose to have sex. That is your choice. And anybody engaging in that behavior needs to come to terms with the reality that pregnancy is a possibility of that. The problem is people want to partake of the pleasure without partaking of the responsibility that comes along with it, the consequences of their actions. If you think you can engage in sexual activity and that pregnancy is not a possible outcome, you're delusional. To use a popular term, you're a science denier. That is a denial of science to say that pregnancy isn't a possibility. One quote that I heard in an interview said, when you consent to sex, you are not consenting to pregnancy, you are consenting to the possibility of pregnancy. What? Yes, the possibility of pregnancy. You need to be okay with that possibility, right? That is a seriously irresponsible position to hold, but we live in a very irresponsible society that does not want to accept the natural consequences of our actions. And again, I can't help but think that most abortions probably just take place for this reason. I just don't want a baby. I think that's the true reason why most abortions take place. And again, the Bible is very clear on this. Very, very clear. 1 Corinthians 6 and 18 tells us to flee sexual immorality. Yes, show some self-control. Show some self-control. Hebrews 13 and verse 4 says, marriage is honorable among all, and the bed undefiled. But fornicators and adulterers, God will judge. Do you believe in God? Do you believe he's the almighty creator? Do you have a godly worldview or a godless worldview? Because a godly worldview says God tells you to save sex for marriage. Period. And understand that it can lead to a baby. He only permits sex between a man and a woman joined together in marriage. That's it. That is it. God calls us to practice self-control. It's irresponsible to not acknowledge the possibility of a baby being conceived. Finally, there are the outlier arguments. We often hear, what about rape and incest, right? Or what about the health of the mother? And Planned Parenthood uses these excuses. They say, you know, they're in an abusive relationship or were sexually assaulted. The pregnancy is dangerous or bad for their health. The reality is, is less than 1%. Less than 1% of abortions occur because of rape or incest or because of the life of the mother. And those statistics come from the Guttmacher Institute, which is the think tank associated with Planned Parenthood. They work with Planned Parenthood. So they're going to go with the largest number possible. And the largest number they can come up with is less than 1% of abortions because of rape, incest, or life of the mother. There's never an excuse to end an innocent life. There's just not. I don't know enough about the health of the life of a mother. If a pregnancy is impossible, I don't know about that. But there's never an excuse to end an innocent life, period. These are the exceptions, not the rule. The exceptions, not the rule. And you never make the rule based on the exceptions, right? That's not what we make rules based on. That's why they're called exceptions. But even still, those individuals are still created in God's own image. Another aspect of this, when people use these outlier arguments, what about rape and incest or the health of the life of the mother? Usually, they still believe in abortion for the other reasons too, but they can't make a coherent argument. They see the fallacy in their argument, so they fall back on these outlier arguments. That's what normally happens. Not all the time, but normally that's what happens. So most arguments, again, fall into one of these categories. All of these arguments come from a godless worldview that either denies that God created every human in his own image or doesn't care. And it doesn't matter which side you fall on. You either deny it or you don't care that he created every human in God's own image. That's the first of the two big problems. One other problem before we close today that I want to highlight. One, you don't hear talked about very much, but abortion deprives you of the opportunity for love. And the more I think about it, the more I'm convinced that this is the reason why the devil loves abortion as much as he does. Because there is no equivalent in this world to the love between a parent and a child. Nothing else is the same type of relationship, period. It is a love that cannot be explained. And I don't think it can be understood until you've experienced it. But if you've experienced the pleasure of welcoming a child into the world, you understand. You understand what a gift of God that is. Behold, children are a heritage from the Lord. The fruit of the womb is a reward. Are children a lot of work? Absolutely they are. Yes, they're a lot of work. But it is the most rewarding work you will ever do. And what does God require of us? To serve and love other people, right? That's what he wants from people. A couple more verses over in Matthew. Look at Matthew chapter 20. Matthew chapter 20. What did Jesus come here to do, right? And giving his example before offering himself as a sacrifice for us. Matthew 20, verse 25 through 28. But Jesus called, Jesus called them to himself and said, "You know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and those who are great exercise authority over them. Yet it shall not be so among you. But whoever desires to become great among you, let him be your servant. Whoever desires to be first among you, let him be your slave. Just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life a ransom for many." I can't think of a better opportunity to serve another human being than being a parent. Nothing says love and service like waking up at 2:30 in the morning to change a diaper. Nothing. That is the most humbling form of service that I can imagine. Go over to Matthew 25. We read here last week. Last week we discussed righteousness. And we noted Jesus characterized the righteous as those who were charitable and generous and took care of others. I got thinking about that when I was preparing this lesson. Read the same passage, but think of it in terms of being a parent. Matthew 25, 34 through 40. "Then the king will say to those in his right hand, 'Come, you blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you for the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, you gave me food. I was thirsty, you gave me drink. I was a stranger and you took me in. I was naked and you clothed me. I was sick and you visited me. I was in prison and you came to me. Then the righteous will answer him, saying, Lord, when did we see you hungry or feed you or thirsty and give you drink? When did we see you a stranger and take you in or naked and clothe you? Or when did we see you sick or in prison and come to you? The king will answer and say to them, assuredly I say to you, inasmuch as you did it to one of the least of these, my brethren, you did it to me. Jesus isn't talking about parenting here. But if verses 35 and 36 aren't an accurate description of parenting at its most fundamental level, I don't know what is. Feeding, providing drink, clothing, even the part about taking in a stranger. You don't know this baby until they're there, right? They're a stranger you take into your home and love unconditionally. Taking care of them when they're sick. This is what it means to parent. Parenting gives you the opportunity to do all of this. That's what love looks like. This is what the righteous look like. And abortion takes away that opportunity. Now, not everyone learns the lessons that are to be taught, but parenting can teach you how to love and serve and be patient and be selfless and humble, qualities our society desperately needs, right? Does every parent learn those lessons? Sadly, no. But that's what we can and what we should be learning as parents. I call heaven and earth as witness today against you, that I have set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore, choose life. Have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather expose them. Vindicate the weak and fatherless. Do justice to the afflicted and destitute. I don't know if anything here is going to change anybody's mind or not, but we got to speak the truth regardless. Maybe it will. Maybe it will. But when I stand before God on the day of judgment, I want to stand before him as one who has defended the weak in whatever way I can. I want to be able to stand before him as one who chose life and encouraged those I love to do the same. What can you do to choose life? Is there a way you can help the weak and innocent? There might be something you can do to get involved. All the way from adoption to helping single mothers, helping families going through difficult times. There are ways you can get involved out there. At the very least, be praying for mothers in these situations. Be praying for doctors and nurses to have a change of heart. Be praying for our politicians to see the truth and to do what is right. And also, while I believe wholeheartedly politics should be left out of the pulpit as much as possible, I also believe it is important to add here, be very careful who you vote for. Be very careful who you vote for. No Christian should have any part of putting someone in office who supports killing innocent children. I thank you for your time. This is a difficult topic to think much about. I know it's kind of a long lesson. There's a lot to cover in there, and there's a lot more that could be said about it. But as we close, I'd be remiss if I didn't offer an invitation for you to get your life right with the Lord this morning. If you're not a child of God but wish to be, you have that opportunity to become a child of God, to be born again through having your sins washed away in baptism. If you are a child of God and something is not right in your life, you need to confess sins, you need to ask for prayers, if you need any support, you can let us know today. And if you want, you can do that right now as we stand and as we sing.